Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Millionaire Mindcast, the show that focuses on all things mindset, money, and motivation to help you, our amazing listeners, increase your income, impact, and influence. I'm your host, Matty A, and thank you for tuning in, as always, checking out the podcast today. Whether you're an entrepreneur, an employee, retired, in college, whatever it may be, we cover all kinds of inspirational topics that are important for building a healthy, wealthy, balanced, and most importantly, an epic and legendary life. So if you're a longtime returning listener, I gotta say, as always, you know I love you. I appreciate you guys. I have an awesome show for you today with Edna Keep, who has really an inspiring story of going from literally nothing to personally owning over $47 million in real estate investments in just under 10 years. Yes, you heard that correctly. So she shares that exact journey with us today and how she did it, and some really great advice. But before we dive in, as always, wanna share with you a few quick reminders of all the awesome things that are going on inside the Millionaire Mindcast community. And if you're not a part of the free Facebook community, I invite you to join us. So go ahead to Facebook, type in Millionaire in the Making, and add yourself to the Facebook group, or one of our admin will get you in there. And really, we have people from all walks of life at all different stages of their financial journey, from really all over the world, which is awesome, who are striving for more and marching towards that millionaire status and beyond, right? So don't forget to join us there. And also don't forget to download this free resource that we have inside the community each and every month, the 5-step guide on how to find your first or your next mentor, because I'm always getting asked about mentorship and the best ways to find one, or you know, how to align yourself with one. So I decided to create this guide for anyone who's looking for a strategic plan on how to find and land the right mentor to accelerate your results and maybe a specific area of your business or your life. So if you want this free resource, all you gotta do is text the word mentors to 44222, and it will automatically deliver over to your email inbox. Again, that's mentors to 44222, and you'll get this 5-step guide sent right over to you. It's very insightful and very actionable. So now that we got that out of the way, today's millionaire worth modeling is Edna Keep. She was a previous financial planner turned real estate investor who went from owning no properties to building a $47 million real estate portfolio without any prior experience, without the money. And it was really fun just hearing her journey from when she attended her first Rich Dad, Poor Dad investing seminar now to where she's at today with her current portfolio and everything she's learned in between. So this interview, we talk about, you know, the art of using creative financing to increase your cash flow, even if you have none to start. She also talked about how, you know, bringing in partners and joint ventures and some of the different ways of structuring these deals played a role in her investment success, and why she recommends using partners to get your foot in the door of the investing world. We talked about, you know, why the most successful people in the world constantly spend money on their education and grow themselves, like you are, right? Committing yourself today to listening to some kind of insight or value that you can apply in your own journey. And I also liked our conversation about how to recognize the right time to cut your losses and get out of a deal, or maybe just get out of a relationship or something in general, right? When to cut your losses. And she also shares, to kind of kick off, don't miss this part, the last part of the interview, the must avoids and the must do's when you're getting started. So a lot of great stuff in the interview today. Get ready for some jam-packed conversation full of value, most importantly, that you can apply in any aspect of your wealth building journey, in your business or your life, whatever that definition is to you. And let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into today's show with Edna Keep right after this quick message.
Have you ever wanted to tap into the minds of other successful millionaires and see exactly what things they are learning and implementing in their lives and businesses? Well, now you can by subscribing to Millionaire Notes, the exclusive monthly newsletter that delivers all the books, resources, insights, and strategies that the brightest millionaires from around the world are leveraging to build wealthier lives. Each and every month, the Millionaire Mindcast team and I compile the best tips, tools, and wisdom shared by my guests of the show, from all the mastermind groups I'm a part of, from the countless conferences I pay thousands of dollars to attend, and most importantly, the journals my millionaire mentors have given me access to. I've always been a big believer that success leaves clues, and by learning from other brilliant minds, we are able to model our way to a more rich and fulfilling life. And being that time is a limited and precious resource for all of us, we figured here at the Millionaire Mindcast team, we would do all the legwork for you, mine through all the data, and deliver you the most valuable golden nuggets that you can use and implement in your life each and every month. You don't have to do all the research. You don't have to pay hundreds or even thousands of dollars to attend the conferences and the events to gain access to this elite information for literally the price of a morning latte for just $5 a month. You can have all these delivered to your inbox. If you have any desire to increase your income, your impact, or your influence, then Millionaire Notes is for you. To receive your monthly edition, text Millionaire Notes, all one word, to 44222. There's no contracts. You can cancel at any time you like. To sign up today, all you have to do is text Millionaire Notes, all one word, to 44222. Let's dive back into the show.
Well, I am excited to welcome into the show today, Miss Edna Keep. How are you?
I am doing great, Matthew. How are you?
I am fantastic. Any day I get to have a conversation about real estate investing and geeking out on that with a fellow investor who's got a lot of great success under their belt that I can learn from, I'm excited about. And I know we're going to have some awesome conversations like that today.
Perfect.
So where are you based out of for everybody that doesn't know who you are, what you do, where you're from? Why don't you give us kind of the quick cliff note version or rewind a little bit about who is Edna Keep?
Sure. So I'm from Saskatchewan, Canada, and we live just outside the capital city of Regina. We've lived in Saskatchewan our whole lives.
Wow.
And all just about our entire portfolio is in Saskatchewan, although we do have some in Alberta and some in Manitoba, which is the two provinces to each side of us.
Wow. And now for those that are going, okay, she just talked about her portfolio. How large is your portfolio? How many doors or, properties do you have inside of it?
We've been doing this for 10 years. We started in 2007 and we have 437 doors.
Wow.
Valued at $47 million. And our start was we wanted to make $5,000 a month in passive income. I was a financial advisor. I didn't like all the ups and downs of mutual funds. So I thought, well, you know what? We should maybe buy a house or two. And then once I really understood the power of real estate, I couldn't be a mutual fund salesperson anymore. So within 2 years, I actually sold my practice and went full-time into real estate. In 18 months, we'd hit our goal of making that $5,000 a month in passive income.
Wow. Okay. So that is an exciting topic right there, right? For anybody that, most people get into real estate investing have gone, I want to create wealth. I want financial freedom. And therefore, I need to figure out how to crack this, passive income code. So I want to make sure that we unpack that a little bit here later today. But I want to kind of go back and recap what did that journey look like over the last 10 years, right? 07 was right before this big crash. And that's when you were getting into it.
Yeah.
How were you able to kind of capitalize over the last 10 years to get over 400, units at a $47 million valuation? What does that look like? Unpack that for us a little bit.
Sure. So we started taking classes in, I think our first class was in June of 2007. We were introduced to the Robert Kiyosaki Group. And we were invited to a three-day event, which did cost us, I can't remember how much, I think $500 for the two of us, my husband and I. And when we were there, we met a couple whose really good friends had taken the Kiyosaki courses 2 years prior, and they were doing really well. They had like 20 houses. And so when we were sitting in class, of course, at the end of the class, they give you an offer to upgrade. And my husband and I talked and we went, it's a lot of money because it was like 27,000 US. But we said, who do we want to be like? I'd had a client that had told me about the real estate, but they did two fix and flip houses while they were working their government jobs with two young kids, and they were totally burnt out and gave totally up on real estate after that. And I said, do you want to be like them? Or do you want to be like the couple who've got 20 doors in 2 years? I think I'd like to be like them. Let's take the classes. So we took the classes. And that was the start. We spent our first year totally immersed in the learning. And one of my favorite classes was creative finance, because my background is as a financial advisor, right? So when I could see that we could buy this real estate without using our own money, like through vendor take backs and investor money and stuff, it just really, really excited me. So our first property we ever bought was a condo, a single family condo. And as it turned out, like, I was a single mom, Matthew, when I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And my daughter was living in that condo. So when we drove up and the realtor says to me, that condo's for sale, that condo's, because it was an apartment building complex that they condoed. And I said, that one? He said, yeah. And I said, my daughter just moved in there about a month ago. I will buy it, because I knew then I would have a good tenant.
Yeah,
right?
You got a guaranteed tenant.
No doubt. And that was a scare for us, you know, dealing with tenants. We didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days later, when I was telling my daughter what we were going to do, she said, well, you know, the couple next door have been living in their unit for 17 years. And I said, okay, I'm buying that one too. Because I thought, there's two guaranteed tenants. I didn't have to worry about tenants. So we bought them. Within 2 months of buying them, the other couple moved out. They bought their own. I think I talked too much about what a good investment it was. And but you know what? We never looked back. We got a good tenant after that. We realized it wasn't as hard as we thought it was going to be. And we actually used the equity out of our home, because the difference in Canada and US at that time is, in our area in Saskatchewan, we were on an upward trend from 2002 when we bought our new house in a really nice area. Our house went up almost $200,000. And so we took the equity out of our home, because all of our money was tied up in mutual funds.
Right.
And that's what we used to purchase our first two homes and our education. And then our third home, well, we still had some money, but we knew if we used that money that we would have no money to go any further. So we actually asked the seller if she would do a vendor take back for us. And we had to explain what that was, because she didn't know. So we said to her, well, basically, we've got the money to put as the down payment. We're going to finance 80%, but we want to buy a lot more real estate. So we're looking for investors. So would you be interested in getting a 6% return on that? I think it was $32,000. And she says, yeah, I would. She says, you know, I feel like I'm going to win twice on this deal, because we gave her full offering price, asking price.
Okay.
And vendor take back of 6%. So she was on cloud nine, because she didn't want to deal with tenants and toilets anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, so our payment to her was $160 a month. That property, we own it to this day, up down duplex, two bedrooms up, one down. It still cash flows us almost $1,000 a month. So that helps us, you know, we live on a you know, well, fairly new acreage we built out here in 2011.
Wow.
And that's like half our payment. One house is half our payment. So we really knew when we did that,
that we were on
our way. Yeah. We knew. Because I mean, we were taught, if you can buy a property that has $50 a month cash flow, you should buy it. And we went, holy cow, $1,000 a month. And you know, I was just actually talking to a client this morning, and we're still over $1,000 a month there, because we get, so our rent used to be a lot higher. I think we were getting $1,200 up and $800 down. So it was $2,000 a month, and our payments are only $520, like payments, taxes, and insurance. So Even today with $1,600 rent, we're making over $1,000 a month on that property.
One property.
So
and you use creative financing to limit what you had to bring to the table. And now it's cash flowing you over $1,000 a month.
Yeah. And the only thing we paid on it was the legal fees, which was about $2,500. And so, yeah, like I said, we knew. And so then we bought another condo in the same complex, a one bedroom this time. But by that time, it was a year later, we were able to refinance those two condos because they'd went up in price, pull our cash out of it, and buy the third condo. So That's just what was happening in our market at the time. Those condos probably cash flowed us at the time around 500 a month because we were getting really good rent. Rents have dropped in our area a bit, so now they're maybe 200-300 a month. So not huge, but we still own them to this day. They were just down the street from where we used to live. Of course, my daughter doesn't live there anymore. She's got her own house. But, you know, good investments. But we did learn that multifamily was more lucrative. So then we went on and bought a whole bunch of duplexes up down, and we started bringing in joint venture partners. So our first joint venture partner, we had him put the down payment, we paid the legal fees, and then we built up a reserve fund together out of cash flow for the next year. And then we split the cash flow after that, because by this time I was full time and we needed cash flow. So that was our way to do that. And then we started, okay, well, we need more of this capitalized. So then we started getting the investors to fund the reserve fund and fund the legal fees. So then now there's no money coming out of our pocket. We're still splitting the cash flow. On each property, we were cash flowing at the time about $1,000 a month. So that was $500 a month each. Everybody happy, right? Everybody
happy. Win-win all around.
We did about 12 deals like that in a year. And then we got, I was meeting a new realtor, and I said, this is what we're looking for, up-down duplexes or the opportunity to put a basement suite in something. And I told him how many we'd bought in the last year. And he says, Edna, why don't you just buy an apartment building? I said, oh, we can't buy an apartment building. We don't have enough houses yet. You know, that old monopoly thing. Uh-huh. That's what we were thinking. And he said, oh, no. He says, you can go straight. You can go into multifamily. You guys have the net worth to pull it together. Our partners, because remember I told you about the couple who were at the first three-day event?
Yeah.
They're friends. We met them and we partnered with them. So we did some joint ventures with them on the money side with us, and they raised capital because at that time I was still a financial advisor, so I couldn't. So anyway, the realtor said, I've got a 24 unit for sale. I think you should buy it. We can condo convert it, buy it at 75 a door, sell it out at 125,000 a door. That's what was happening in our area. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, you think we can qualify? He says, yep. I said, well, let's try. So I said, write the offer. And he said, well, don't you want to look at it? And I said, I'll go drive by while you write the offer. So I went and drove by, because you can't really get into a building until you made the offer. So we did. Our partners at the time had been away on a training course. We called them and said, as soon as you land, you come over to our house. We have something big for you. And we said, so we just bought a 24-unit apartment building. Would you be interested in partnering with us? And absolutely. So it took us a while to close that deal because, you know, that was right when the U.S. market had the big correction. A lot of the lenders were having trouble. Yep. So we were actually dealing with a lender who was based out of the U.S., and every day he'd say, yeah, we got it. And then it'd be another delay and another delay and another delay. Till one day we phoned and there was no answer.
Oh, wow.
And we're panicking and we go, well, what do we do? So we went back to the vendor, told him the story, got a vendor take back. I think they really thought like because 75 a door, very few people had sold at that price. So they had probably bought back when they were 10,000 a door. So they just couldn't see the big picture. And you know what? We're routinely buying at 120 a door right now, to give you an idea. We actually wish we would have kept that building. Mm. But we condo converted it, sold it out, made our investors a lot of money, not so much ourselves, because it took longer than we thought. And right at the time, there were so many condo conversions that we were one of the last ones allowed in. So then we kind of got scared and didn't want to do anymore. Well, actually, weren't even allowed to do anymore. But that's how we got our first 24 unit. Then the next 6 months, we bought another 18 unit that was already condo converted. So we were selling it out. And then after that, we thought, nah, you know what, let's just keep them. So I thought, if I can raise money for 12 houses, which is basically $70,000 a piece, I may as well just start into apartment buildings and make it a minimum of $100,000. And so then that's how we start buying all our apartment buildings.
That's great. And we're going to talk a lot about, because financing and structuring deals, being that that is such a loaded, you know, area for a lot of investors, I want us to unpack that a little bit, being that this is your space, this is what you do. But I'm always curious, you know, when you first started out, when you went to that investing course, because a lot of the top real estate investors that I talk to, they paid for their education and or they paid through it through a lot of sweat equity with different mentors or mastermind groups or whatever it may be. But looking back on that $27,000 investment, you know, at the time probably seemed a little scary, a little mind-boggling, but now looking back and the path that you've been on because of it, would you say it's worth it?
Totally worth it. You know, I used to read different forums where people would go in and say nasty things about Robert Kiyosaki's group and, oh, we never got anything out of it and we just paid all this money. And I thought, you're crazy. Like, value. We got a ton of value, but we absorbed it and we did it.
Yeah.
I still remembered our very first conference, which is where we actually got inducted into their Hall of Fame for how many strategies we'd done, and how well we'd done in our 18 months. We sat with a couple who'd been in his programs for 3 years, and we were excited to sit with them because we thought, okay, here's somebody who's, you know, advanced from us. They had not bought a property yet. So those are the ones that complain the program doesn't work, when in reality, who doesn't work?
Right. You know, they don't. Right?
Yeah. And because we learned a lot. I had a mentor through there. I'm still really good friends with her today. She was from our city, but she doesn't live in our city, but we still get together. And we learned so much. It was just powerful. And you know, we never stopped. After the first year, we met some other mentors that were doing even, you know, more advanced stuff. And I think my ability to raise capital attracted people to me. So we got involved in a lot of more masterminds, more training. You know, I say easily over our 10 years of doing this, I bet you I've spent more than $500,000 in my education. But yeah. You know what? We make $25,000 a month in mortgage pay down alone. Do you think I can afford $500,000 over the last 10 years?
For anybody that's, you know, wondering, I'm going to leave this question out there, is would you pay $500,000 to build a $47 million portfolio? That's a mic drop right there, right? Of course yeah. You would. That's a no-brainer. Yeah. So yeah. I always like to ask that question because you see a lot of different available courses and resources and coaches and mentors out there that are providing true value to people. And then you get the internet trolls or the naysayers or the, you know, the people that just really don't take action, right? They're the constant seekers, but they aren't the constant doers. And I always say, you know, if you do something consistently day after day and make smart choices, surround yourself with the right people, there's no way you won't be successful if you stay on that path. But it's usually where people, right before they get successful, they give up or they stop. So
yeah.
I just wanted to ask that question. Because
it's not easy, is it, Matthew? There's challenges in real estate.
Every day.
One of the things that I train my students on a lot is mindset, because you have to have a strong mind to be able to put up with the challenges with real estate. Is it worth it? Absolutely. And you know, the growth in ourselves as people over the last 10 years, my husband and I, amazing. We're totally different people. And we've loved that whole journey too. We've changed our mindset about so many things. Like, I remember thinking like, geez, could I replace my income? I was making good income as a financial advisor. I was making routinely $250,000 a year. And people, a lot of people thought I was absolutely crazy to give up something like that to go after real estate. Like, are you kidding me? There's something wrong with you. That's stuff I got. And I went, no, I see it. After I seen it, I couldn't sell mutual funds. So it was just like, so what do? I stay where I am the rest of my life, or I go out and do something that I can really wrap my head around. And I felt like I could offer something unique in the real estate space where I couldn't in the mutual fund advisor space. There's millions of those advisors out there. So now I call myself a real estate investment advisor, help a lot of people get involved in real estate. We've built our whole portfolio with 25 investors, and that's huge because they keep repeat investing with us.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people probably were thinking you're crazy, and now looking at you, they're probably thinking you're the smartest woman they know, right?
Yeah. big difference now.
Absolutely.
Mind you, you know what? We don't hang around with anybody anymore, hardly, that we used to hang around with 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So our whole friendships, the people that we hang around with just changed. When I did my first 3-day event 3 years ago, I looked out into the audience and I was, because I was telling people the difference, there was one person in the audience that I knew less than since I got into real estate.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's actually in real estate with me. She's one of our main joint venture partners.
Hey, it's so true though. I mean, birds of a feather flock together, right? You hang around 9 other people who are investing, making deals happen, talking about ways they can get it done versus, you know, 9 people that are naysayers and victim mentalities and, you know, excuse makers. Whichever one you're hanging around, you're probably going to become the 10th person in whichever circle that is. So I can totally understand and relate to that. It is a big part of, you know, your tribe attracts your vibe and really raises that ceiling for you. So I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it does.
With the whole financing thing, because this is something that, you know, keeps a lot of people on the fence, right? I mean, I know when I was first starting out, it scared the heck out of me. I was broke. I had no money, credit card debt, bad credit, right? Yeah. And when I found that amazing deal, I found a way to finance it 100% with other people's money. But to a lot of people, that's mind-boggling, right? They're like, well, that works for you. That works for Edna, right? But it can't work for me.
Yeah.
So why don't we unpack that a little bit and just share, well, what are first and foremost a lot of the most common or different ways that you can finance properties?
Well, like I said, our very first rental property was a vendor take back. So that meant the seller financed it for us. So she financed 20%, the lender financed 80%. And the other way is to bring in investor capital. So we did that shortly after that with a joint venture house. We said, okay, would you invest $70,000 to get $500 a month and 50% of a building? We'll manage it, so you don't have anything to do with it. We're still going to pay property management because we still didn't want to deal with that side of stuff.
Yep.
And we sold it, and we got lots of buyers. And then we decided to, well, actually at one point we couldn't get any more houses. That's why we brought the joint venture partners in. But then after a while we thought, well, let's just do the multifamily. I think one of the things people don't realize, and I get this actually with all my students, well, why would people just give me money? Like, you know, why would they do that?
Right.
And I said, well, they don't just give you money. You provide a very, very, very valuable service. And that service is that you help people invest in real estate where they otherwise couldn't. You educate them and you manage the deal. Most of our investors are armchair investors. You manage the deal, they sit back and collect the cash flow. Another thing that we do that we feel is a little bit unique is we don't take any payment on when we're raising money for an apartment building, except a small acquisition fee of 1% of the building or so, or 2%, depending on how much ownership we give up.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we don't take any cash flow until the investors have all their money back. So that's another thing. And that's why we've been able to.
So they're getting their preferred return. And then after.
We don't give them a return.
Okay.
No, we just give them their principal back. So generally we use 1 year to optimize the building.
Okay.
Then at the end of the year or 6 months, depending, of course, it's always to our advantage to get them paid off as soon as possible.
Right.
There's no reason for us to hold on to their money unless we need it for reserve fund or something. So we get them paid off as quick as possible. And then that's when our share comes in. So say if we do a 50-50 deal, they get 100% of the cash flow till they get all their money back.
Gotcha.
Then they get 50% of the cash flow and we get 50% of the cash flow.
Beautiful.
So
a seller financing, right? Seller carry back, where basically you're having the conversation with the owner that you're buying the property from and you're saying, hey, do you want to be my bank on this, right? And instead of, like you said, toilets and tenants and all of the, you know, headaches that go along with that, it still gives them, I always have the conversation with the sellers when I do this as well, is saying, look, you're still an investor, but I'm going to take all the headaches off your plate. I'm going to take all the management off your plate. I'm going to take the taxes off your plate. And you're just going to become my bank. And you're still going to get that monthly passive income without all the headaches. And really, I'm highlighting the pain points of why they actually are even considering selling in the first place, right?
Exactly. And you know what? I think we all get to that point where we want to be that armchair investor.
Absolutely. Like,
We want people to take care of the tenants and toilets so we don't have to. Now, in the building stage, you have to. And I mean, we don't. We have a property manager, but we still have to pay the bills. We still have to manage the deal. My oldest daughter actually is now our property manager. So she handles all the headache stuff. She
pass it off to the family. You take care of the headaches.
She does like it. And every once in a while, she'll tell me a story about a tenant. And I say to her, you know what? I don't even want to know. Just send me the bill. Because I get mad. You know, how could somebody do that to my building? So you really have to distance yourself a bit that way. So that's another reason why I think we've been able to grow, is because we've never dealt with that side. We you know, off kind of one-off deal with it. But we don't deal with the day-to-day stress of it, which a lot of
landlords bog you down, right?
Oh, you know, I've seen people take the same classes we did, buy four properties, choose to manage them themselves to save that $100 or whatever. And I run into them 5 years later and that's all they own because they can't imagine handling anymore. Well, that's your system, how you build it so that you don't have to be the one who manages it every day.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And that really kind of, so for people that are going, okay, so seller financing, this sounds cool. Or, hey, you know, for example, on a lot of my flips that I do, I have a private money lender that will fund the first and fund construction. And then I use a second position investor and I give them a return on their money. So I fund my flips without any of my own money. And a lot of the, you know, I guess rebuttals or limiting beliefs that I hear from a lot of people is, well, I don't have those kind of people in my network, right? Or where do I find that kind of money? So my question is, you know, where do you find your investors and what kind of conversation are you having with them? What's the script? How can people use what you're doing as a model to implement in their own world to get that first investment?
Very good question. Okay. So one of the first things that I believe is value equals money. I've got the sticky note right on my desk. See this? Value equals money. So how can you provide these people a value? So I teach people in my courses what their value is, because most people don't understand their value to a deal. They just think, I'm going to use somebody else's money. And they think, you know, why would they give me money? So I turn it around and I go, why wouldn't they? Guess what? You got the gold. You got the deal. You got the ability to give them a really good return. Let's turn that around and go, hey, I got the gold. Do you want to be part of it? Yes. And then we show them how they can be part of it without dealing with tenants and toilets. And people love the touchy-feely of real estate. They love to be able to go drive by their building, see it. There's not all just these numbers on a piece of paper.
Right.
There's our building. And so the biggest thing that people have to understand first is their value. So your value in a fix and flip is that you can give your guy a really decent return on his money. Whereas if he stuck in the bank, he'd earn like what, 1 or 2% if he's lucky, fully taxable and everything else. So you give your investor really good return on his money. That's the value equation. People don't just give you money. Like you don't go to an investor and say, you know, I'm broke. I don't have any experience, but I want to use your money and do this long-term buy and hold or flip or whatever. Doesn't work. Right. Who's going to give you money when you do that? So you really have to know and internalize that value. And then the other thing that I tell people too, one of the first parts of my course is building your power team. And then you utilize that power team. So when you're buying, and in our case, because I'm not sure how you do it with your flips, but we're buying long-term buy and hold. So one of our power team is a property manager. Power team is a lender, a lawyer. You know, so when you're doing up your presentation to your investor, I'm not alone.
Right.
And I tell them I'm on your power team because I'm there helping you, holding your hand. I've got $47 million worth of real estate. Do you think I know a thing or two? So now when my students are getting, you know, raising capital and stuff like that, they write right on their executive summary, I'm backed by my coach, Edna Keep, who owns $50 million worth of real estate. I work with a group of people who own over $130 million worth of real estate because with me and my students, that's about what it is now. So that's all value equations. It's not just one person. You know, even now, if I pretended I was one person doing all of that, they would see right through me. So you have to have that power team in place. First of all, a lender, a traditional bank, is going to want to see that.
Yep.
But your investor wants to see that too.
I love that. Those are great conversations to have. And I say the same thing. You hold the gold in your hand, right? So instead of it being an ask, it's an offer, really, exactly. Is what I tell people is yep. you are not asking for money. You are offering a true opportunity that if they could get this elsewhere, then they would do it, right? But they yes. can't. And so we are providing them with, you know, something better than, you know, stocks and bonds. And we're providing opportunity to not only make a much better return than that, but it's also a tangible asset that is collateralized by something physical that they can go and touch.
Yes, yes. And one other thing that we present to each and every investor too, is we talk about worst case scenarios. So I ask an investor, you know, if we bought a $300,000 property or 3 million, doesn't matter. And in 20 years, we went to sell it and it was still worth the same value. Would you think that was a good investment? Well, no.
Right.
Okay. What about this? Okay. So we bought that 3 million or let's say 4 million just for ease, $4 million property. We used $1 million of our own money. At the end, we sell it for 4 million and we only ever put in the initial 1 million, but we used all the cash flow to pay off, you know, fix the place. And we had a little higher vacancy, so we didn't get any cash, but still in that 20 year period, you earned 3 million on your 1 million. That alone is like a 7% return on your money. That, my friend, is our worst case scenario in a long-term buy and hold, right? So we use that all the time. You know, we're not going to let our buildings get in disrepair. It doesn't make any sense. We keep care of our buildings. We keep care of our tenants. We consider our tenants customers. Where else can a customer give you a lifetime value or a year value of $12,000? How many businesses get to say that? How many businesses get to say, my tenants paid off my mortgage? So yeah, there's your worst case scenario. So could you live with that?
Yeah.
And they go, well, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So I like how you frame that though in the conversation, right? So it almost just through the conversation itself lets them see things through a different set of lenses to where it does become a no-brainer, right? Mm-hmm. It is one of those like assumptive conversations where you get them nodding their head before they even say yes.
Yes.
Which is beautiful. And that goes back to the power of scripting, right? And understanding what not only what opportunity you're providing, but how you deliver that to them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's great. So give me a little rundown on what kind of criteria you look for, right? A lot of people, you know, might have some cash laying around or they may not, but they might be saying, you know, okay, I want to get that first, you know, rental property. What kind of criteria would you recommend for those individuals that are first starting out?
From the investor side?
From the investor side. Yeah. What should they be looking for?
We have a minimum of $100,000 to invest with us. And I tell my students when they're brand new, like you could take on more, you could do 25, 50, whatever. We do 100 because we just want to live in that space. We don't want to have 50 people on a building. Our very first building, that's what we did. Like we had about 50 investors with us. And that's a lot to manage, a lot to handle.
Right.
So now we have a limit of 100. And what you're looking for is, How do the partners make their money? Like, do they get paid a bunch of money up front? Do they share cash flow? This is on apartment buildings. Is there any way that you're going to end up hurt in the long run? We like our business model because other than our small acquisition fee, which just kind of keeps us going, we don't take any money out of the deal till the investors are 100% paid back. The benefit of that is they've got a partner that's 100% committed to make this deal the best deal they can make it, because they don't get paid till they're you know, got all their money back,
until they're whole.
And once you don't have any money in there's no more risk to you. So that's how we share it. And that's what I'd be looking for now, because ultimately my goal is to train all my students so that I can just invest with them, you know, because they follow my model. They follow my business. They know better not to send me a 20 page figure this out, Edna. It's like, if you can't put it on this one page for me, I'm not looking at it. I had a realtor send me a deal the other day, 96 doors. And he gave me the price, and I said, you know, that's like 200 and some a door. What do you get for rent at that place? And he says, well, would you like a perform on it? And I said, sure. So he sends it over, and I did a quick analysis. I have a 10-minute analysis sheet. I said, that property is negative $20,000 a month cash flow. Who's going to buy that? Or I said, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Good luck with selling that. And I said, here's my sheet. Next time you send something to me, run it through there. If it cash flows, send it to me. Otherwise, you're wasting my time, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not scared to ask a realtor to do that. And guess what? I never heard back from the guy.
Yep. Hey, that's so important, though, is to know your criteria, especially when you're going to present, you know, someone a deal. You better be presenting them with a good opportunity, because numbers and understanding numbers in this side of the real estate investing space, really in any aspect of the real estate investing space, this is the language. This is, you know, the scorecard of investing, right? And so if you don't understand those numbers, then you're behind, and you will have a very hard time succeeding in this space. What kind of return on investment do you guys look for as a baseline for projects that you're looking to take down?
We look for 12% cash on cash return.
Okay.
Then
can you explain that for someone who doesn't understand what cash on cash means?
Sure. So with our apartment buildings, like I say, we pay our investor back out of the cash flow every month. So we want, based on the money going into a deal, we want that cash on cash return. And you know, it doesn't always happen in the first year. Sometimes it takes us a while to optimize that building, but we want after that 1 year period to be optimized at a cash on cash return of about 12%. So when they're putting their 100,000 in, they know exactly what they're going to get back. Now, it doesn't always work perfectly. Sometimes it takes us a little longer to optimize. I actually have one building right now where I haven't been able to optimize it, so I'm selling it. And we figured it out in 3 years. Like, it's not getting the rents we thought I'd be able to, you know, different, the area is not as great as we thought it was, like different stuff like that. And so you also have to know when to fold, you know, get out of a deal. And
that's a great point, because a lot of people don't, right? We either let ego get in the way, or we, you know, we hope, right? One of my friends always says, don't take copium. Right?
Hopium exactly.
will never get you anywhere. And it's so true. So when is the right time to cut your losses or just get out?
Well, this building we pretty much knew after a year and a half that we couldn't make it cash flow. With the way the market changed a bit, we had bought one the same price, same footprint basically, but we were able to get CMHC financing, which in the US is your Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac type financing.
Okay.
So we only had to put 15% down.
Nice.
We got 1.61% financing for five and a half years.
What?
Yes. And so we thought,
I need to get involved with that program.
Oh, that was awesome. So we thought, okay, well, we'll get the same thing with this one, because we only bought it 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
But it took us a year to optimize the first building. The second building took us more than a year to optimize it, because we went in and gave rent increases, and then our market kind of switched. So we had a bunch of people move out, then we had to fill it up, and then, you know, so and then we had problems with the building envelope. So we had a lot of water issues in there. We had a pipe burst. So then there was mold issues. We just seemed to have endless challenges. Anyway, we got it financed, but we couldn't get it financed in the CMHC. So our difference in interest rate, 3.88 as opposed to 1.61. Well, that was a big deal right there. But we thought, well, we'll get 3 years of financing at this level, and we'll be able to optimize it in the meantime. We spent a ton of money trying to fix our boiler because the last people had not maintained it, even though it was fairly new. So we spent a lot of money to a plumber to get it updated. And then we finally didn't have to spend much money on the building, but it's still more of a transient community. You get the building full and then there's two or three leave. You get the building full and two or three leave. Whereas our other building, you know, we might get one vacancy every now and then. Maybe it's vacant for a month, gives us time to freshen it up, get somebody new in. But this one's a lot higher turnover. I don't know if it's the area. That's kind of what I'm blaming on. There's been some new buildings built in the area where they're charging what we used to charge for rent. You know, so different little things like that. So that's the reason why we're going to sell that one.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I mean, that's a perfect example of, you know, everybody's looking, whoa, $47 million. Well, there's a lot of challenges that go into that, right? And there is, I always joke around and say every deal has or is an ordeal, right? Like there's always something that comes up. If you have a smooth deal from start to finish, which I thank the real estate gods when it does happen, you know, it's not often, right? I mean, there's always something to learn and some new facet of real estate that you're like, wow, I didn't know that before. I wasn't planning for that to happen, you know?
Yeah, you know what? Exactly true. Because, you know, one of my students just took possession of a property here at the beginning of the month. And there was two things that came up in the last week that we'd never dealt with before. And you know, it's interesting, the stuff that comes up with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, after telling my challenging story, can I tell you a couple of success stories?
Oh, give me some wins.
Okay. So we bought in November of 2012, we bought 144 units in northern Saskatchewan. So small town, only 3,000 people. And it took us just about a year to close that building. We closed it, we started in it January of 2012. We closed it November 2012. We were able to get 10-year CMHC financing. We paid like $44,000 a door. So we went in and we renovated all the, as people moved out, we renovated and then we increased the rents. Within 2.5 years, we were able to pay all our investors back. We'd raised $1.2 million. My partner, who was the managing partner, we were considered the money partner because we raised the money. $400,000 payday each out of the loan. So the building pays the loan back.
Yeah.
And we still cash flow that property. And so 2.5 years, they got all their money back. And then they went on and bought two new buildings with us, two 18 units in the city.
That is a perfect example of how if you perform, if you're prepared, if you really go into this like a professional, not only did you win on that deal, but now the relationship and rapport you have with those investors, they're probably chomping at the bit to redeploy their capital with you.
You know what? The day that we announced that they were going to get their money back, we had two new deals lined up. And it was like no-brainer. There was only one fellow who decided not to. And his was just because of his age. He was in his 70s and he just thought he better not lock in for another 5-year period. Mm. You know? And then one other one we had, 18 months. This is another big win. We bought a property for about $90,000 a door. It hadn't been renovated ever. From original. So we updated, put all new cupboards, flooring, stuff like that. We were able to refinance, get all our investors their money back in 18 months. You know, so we always tell our investors, we're always wanting to do that. Can we always do that? No.
Right.
But your maximum time frame is probably 5 to 7 years, you know, but we're working on the same thing. So.
So cool. There's always, you know, there's always wins to be had and there's always opportunities for growth. And just by staying aware and staying, you know, intentional about reflecting on what those are, just constantly gives you the ability to keep raising the bar and learning and growing. And I would say fail forward, you know, there's nobody that has a linear path to success.
No,
so
possible
for those that are just starting out, or really for someone that maybe is in the early stages of, you know, looking to buy investment properties, what's one thing that you would tell them they must do and one thing that you would tell them they must avoid?
They must avoid trying to be a one-man show. And they must hire a mentor or a coach, someone who has a vested interest in their success.
Easy answers, short and sweet. I love it. Yeah. Okay, so final two questions for you. What's your best ever real estate investing advice that you consistently hear yourself saying to your students?
Don't feel like you have to do it alone. So many people feel that, okay, I've learned this or I've taken this course. Now I just got to go out and figure it out and fall on my face. The best shortcut we ever took was joint venturing with somebody who was 2 years senior to us. Mm. And they took a lot of our fear away. Lots of people have, we had a ton of fear. We were scared of tenants. We were scared of roofs. We were scared of furnaces. You know, we had all the fear-based thoughts. But when we partnered with somebody and we said, what if this goes wrong? What if this goes wrong? And they said, yeah, we just handle it. You know what? And so we partnered with them and we watched them handle it.
Yeah.
And we were included in the decisions and we showed them, you know, they showed us some of the things that went wrong, but how they handled it. And we realized that it's like any other thing. You just get through the challenges. They don't stop you. You just get through them. Yeah. And that was probably the biggest thing for us was joint venturing with somebody who had some experience.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. My mentors have helped me avoid plenty of mistakes. They've, you know, let me, I think mentorship or coaching or partners, whatever you want to call it, is one of the greatest hacks in life mm-hmm. and business that we have available to us to be able to tap into someone else's experience, their resources, their credibility, you know, everything, right? Relationships. Yeah. It goes on and on and on. It is one of the greatest hacks.
In our business, we always talk about using other people's money,
yeah.
but other people's knowledge, other people's network, you know, it all adds up. And that's what makes it the teamwork. The teamwork is what makes it happen for you.
Beautiful.
And then the biggest thing to avoid, because I missed that, is doing it alone. Again, it's a repeat, but so many people think, oh, I couldn't partner with people and I couldn't do this and I can't do that. And I just got to read books until I figured it out. Get around people who are like-minded so that when the world beats you up, they help you come back up again because it will happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. You know, mentorships, communities, masterminds, they give you the confidence, right? I think oftentimes when we do get beat up, because life will beat you up, that's proven, is when that does happen, oftentimes by being in those spaces and those conversations around those people, they lend you the belief that they have and see in you that sometimes we don't have in ourselves at that moment.
Yeah. Such and a great, just experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you have created a lot of wealth through real estate and real estate investing. I'm always curious to know, you know, from a, you know, money perspective, I always talk about wealth goes far beyond dollars for me personally, and everybody has a different definition of what wealth means to them. What's your definition of wealth?
Healthy, wealthy, and wise. And the deal there for me is you don't want to have all this money and have illness. So take care of yourself throughout. Learn as you grow. Because you can't just keep using the same tactic over and over. You have to grow and get better and better. Otherwise, you're going to, I think, lose your drive and everything else. So, and one quote I always like to tell people is, your income, and this is from Jim Rohn, your income will never exceed your personal development. So always be working on yourself to get better.
Boom. That is a good way to cap off the interview. Edna, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to have a conversation with you today. You've dropped some amazing tools and resources and insights on real estate investing in general, and just some inspiration, you know, for someone to say, I can be at that very beginning stage. If I want to invest in myself, a mentor, and know that I don't have to be the expert in everything and I can fail my way forward just like Edna, just like most successful investors do, right? Yeah. And it's inspiring. So we're appreciative of you taking the time out of your busy schedule. And for those that want to connect with you, follow what you're up to, where can they find you?
Best way to find me is on my website, ednakeep.com, very easy. Or I do have a couple of Facebook groups where people can get in and kind of get looking. So if they connect with me on Facebook and ask about my group, I'll hook them up into it. We provide good value in there all the time too.
Awesome. We appreciate you and we look forward to staying connected.
Okay. Thanks very much, Matthew. Have a great day.
You bet. Cheers.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Well, that does it for this week's episode of Millionaire Mindcast. Hopefully you enjoyed that conversation with Edna. You know, I personally always love hearing people's journeys from nothing to something, right? That it's not always the rags to riches, but just the journey. There's so many lessons and insights because everybody has different experiences and there's always some kind of goal that we can apply to our own journey. And really in this case, you know, her something, it happened to be a $47 million real estate portfolio. And it just goes to show you that by finding the right investing vehicle, surrounding yourself with the right people, the right resources, knowledge, right, whatever it may be, that, you know, she was able, most importantly, by putting in the work to achieve anything you want. And you really can grow your wealth and your life to levels that you may have never thought possible as well by committing to these same things. So no matter what your dreams are, your goals are, just know that you can conceive anything that your mind actually believes, right? Whatever you dream of for yourself, if your mind can truly see it, if you can envision it, then I guarantee you that you can physically create that reality in your world. And that's why I love interviewing successful entrepreneurs and people from all walks of life, because it constantly reminds me and inspires me that I too can accomplish these kinds of things in my own life. And sometimes it makes me realize that I'm not thinking big enough. And if I choose and commit to doing whatever it takes to making that happen, then it's possible, right? Because if it was easy, literally everybody in the world would be living that 1% lifestyle, but that's just not the case because most people don't want to put in the hard work. But not you, right? Not the Millionaire Mindcast community. So whatever your dream is, go for it, right? And know that by being involved in this community, by listening to this podcast, you're gonna be surrounded by many other people and many other experiences and conversations that are striving and inspiring people to go for their dreams. You're gonna be surrounded by people that are cheering you on, surrounded by resources and tools that will help empower you as you go after those dreams. And by living your best life, I want to remind you that you inspire and give others permission to do the same thing for themselves in their own life. And that's a pretty awesome feeling if you think about it, to not only see what you're going to accomplish in your own life when you play full out and you show up at a high level on a daily basis, but also to see who you inspire along the way and what they accomplish because of what you're doing and how you're showing up, right? And not only all the, you know, accolades and accomplishments you're going to get in that process, but you're going to develop some amazing relationships. You're going to continue to level up. And that is what the journey is all about. So keep hustling, keep striving for more, never settle. And until next time, remember, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.